now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Welcome to autumn. Yes, we are now in the season of autumn, and we finally made it. And for some people, this is the downward spiral because they're not the fans of cooler temperatures or even the cold, you know. And I think it's first week in November we turned the clocks back, so some people aren't fans of that, whereas others like myself love the cooler temperatures. I love the fall foliage. I love it. This is coming into my favorite time of the year and my favorite month, October, as well as November, December, and January. But anyway, good day to one and all. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you want to leave me your comments about today's shows or other shows, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And just wanted to remind everybody out there that these broadcasts are now podcasted in case you want to go back and listen again, or if you want to go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, you may do so as also. Just again, visit the website and just click on the podcast, or I should say the archives, and you'll be able to find those shows. And as always, I just wanted to thank everybody for their support, and just like to say that if you haven't had an opportunity to continue your support by becoming a monthly subscriber, I invite you to do that at any time. Now, a subscription is not required to listen to my talk shows. It doesn't allow you, you know, secretive access to any shows, but, you know, it is greatly appreciated. So I just invite you again to go to the website and click on the link where you'll see subscription and choose any amount that you feel comfortable giving. Well, as I said earlier, welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am very excited to be with you here today, every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time, and any other time in between. And each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of our spirituality and our mental health. And if you wanted to call in today, be part of the show, I'm give you this number here. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. And for those who are tuning in for the first time, thank you. Welcome to the show. And just wanted to start off today's show just reminding everybody that, you know, with Reclaiming Authenticity, It is more than a concept for me. It is actually a way of life. It is something that I had discovered years and years and years ago, doing my own spiritual journey. And of course, you know, I was, as with most people can identify with, probably looking in all the wrong places, and just realized that I was making it harder than what it was, because, you know, I just realized that, you know, to reclaim authenticity means that it's in there to begin with. Because you see, it really doesn't matter who you are or where we were born or into what family we were placed. Ours is a world that's just filled with relationships. And I started to take inventory of the relationships that I had growing up and, you know, past and present and so forth. And we are certainly social beings who we often spend most of our lives trying to make sense of our world by trying to find our place in the world. But as social beings, it's often within the context of our relationships that we experience tremendous pain and suffering. And this could be for anything from overt acts of betrayal and cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us or vice versa, to simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And many people still bear the scars of the physical, psychological, emotional, and even spiritual woundedness. And yet, ironically, just as we experience our woundedness in relationships, it's also within the context of healthier relationships where we can find our healing, our voice, and our authenticity. Now, the difficulty then is often finding the courage to discover that which has always been in you. You know, those gifts, those graces, those skills, that uniqueness that we come into the world already. Or as the Scottish Franciscan John Duns Scotus is one who coined this word, hachaitas, or it's this-ness that we all have. Because I am a firm believer that we come into this world with everything that we already need for ourselves and for others. But through various experiences, we have been given away parts, if not the whole, of that uniqueness of ourselves or that thisness. And, you know, there could be just a number of reasons why people do this. You know, perhaps it's because we didn't feel as though we just simply couldn't live up to another person's expectations of us. Or maybe we hid our thisness, we hid our uniqueness from others in order to survive abuse. Or perhaps those aspects of ourselves we believe have been taken away from us and we didn't really have the strength to fight back. Well, either way, whenever we become aware that we've done these things, it does take tremendous courage to reclaim who we are. But we can reclaim our voice, our uniqueness, our thisness at any time. And this truly is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. And reclaiming authenticity really focuses on the integration of then our spirituality and our mental health. Once we realize this, that, you know, the very best of ourselves is just waiting to be discovered. And again, I place this all within the context of our relationships that we have with ourselves, with others, and with God or the divine. Okay? So, as I said, we are social beings, and you know, we often receive our deepest wounds in those relationships, but we can also experience tremendous, tremendous healing. Okay? And whenever we heal from those relationships, we find that very unique and very powerful gifts await us. Gifts such as grace and understanding, other gifts such as forgiveness and kindness and compassion. And this is also placed within the context of relationships, because whenever we become more compassionate with ourselves, we soon discover that we can be more compassionate with others. Or if we become more patient with ourselves, we then can become more patient with others. And when we are forgiving or more forgiving with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And my favorite thing, and when we are able to live in gratitude, gratitude with ourselves, gratitude with where we have been, gratitude for the lessons that we have learned and so forth, we then discover how gratitude opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And therefore, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. Well, how's your heart today? I hope it is well, and I hope you are well. And if you just so happen to be struggling today, I pray that you will find rest and comfort and the peace that you need. Well, again, welcome to today's show, Turning the Handle and Walking Through the Door of Healing. Now, if anybody out there listening is a fan of the, I guess we would call them a rock band, back in the 70s and so forth, they're still out touring and making music and so forth. But the band I'm referring to is the Eagles, very popular in the early 70s. And there's one particular song that once I heard it, again, just opened my eyes to just basically understanding where healing is perhaps even right under our nose at times. Okay, and the song I'm referring to is Already Gone. It's a song recorded by the Eagles for their 1974 album On the Border. And the one line that just latched on to me and has never left go is this: how often do we live our lives in chains and we never know we have the key? How often do we live our lives in chains and we never know we have the key? Right? And as I mentioned earlier, this the discovery of what lies within us is basically one of my deep-seated beliefs. You know, that everybody comes into this world already gifted with the skills and talents and our own personality and so forth in order to discover those things and to cultivate those things and to use these things for the better benefit of others. And when we think about it, you know, down through history, often our greatest spiritual teachers and gurus are the ones who enable us, they empower us to discover the potential of what lies within. They help us realize that we have the key. Now, a guru is a title that's typically found in Hinduism, the context of Hinduism, but a guru is more than a teacher. And traditionally, the guru is a very revered figure to a student, with the guru serving as a counselor, one who helps mold the values and shares his or her experiential knowledge as much as, let's say, a literal knowledge. And often exemplifying this in life. So he or she can also be an inspirational source and one who helps in the spiritual evolution of a student. So a guru is one's spiritual guide who helps one to discover the same potentialities that the guru himself or herself has already realized. Now, interestingly, whether it is in Western or Eastern cultures, effective teachers, the most effective teachers, the most effective mentors, the most influential leaders throughout history have been characterized by those who have this gift to help pull out of others the very best of themselves. In fact, effective teachers and mentors and leaders will not allow others to settle for mediocrity. You know, even if there is resistance on the part of a student or the resistance on one who is following them, you know, effective leaders and mentors and leader and teachers, they are patient. You know, they know that everybody is on his or her own spiritual journey. And sooner or later, everyone arrives at his or her truth. And effective leaders and mentors and effective teachers empower others to discover greatness in themselves, as well as looking to find greatness in others. Okay? And effective teachers and mentors and leaders never, ever seek to control others. And the reason why we say great teachers and mentors and leaders can do this is because they themselves have discovered how to live in forgiveness and how to live in gratitude and how to live in love, all in the backdrop of relationships on a daily basis. But, you know, you have to, you know, let's be honest here. You know, sometimes we find or we come across a very effective teacher or a mentor or a leader, and we can become complacent, you know, believing that all we need to do is just hang around this person and ask for one blessing after another. You know, like something's going to rub off sooner or later. And in a sense, it's like, okay, yeah, something's going to rub off. But, you know, in all actuality, we have our own work to do in terms of cultivating forgiveness and gratitude and love into our daily lives. And this is perhaps why, you know, as a counseling educator and a clinician and a pastoral professional, I am often, I guess, still saddened, I would say, by the times when people's beliefs that when it comes to addressing their, let's say, their physical, emotional, and spiritual problems, they consider themselves powerless and without, you know, a voice. And perhaps this is a result of never feeling valued or never allowed to find their voice, let alone use their voice. Because admittedly, many people are unable to perceive their insights and their strengths as if they cannot see themselves capable of healing, let alone achieving anything meaningful in their lives. You know, most of the time, people are pretty much content to live for these brief moments of joys and celebrations, and we often mark off our lives by transitional milestones of, let's say, baptisms and marriages and birthdays and graduations and career promotions and retirement and so forth. Well, furthermore, when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many people are often overwhelmed not only by the concept that the answers they seek often lie within themselves, but also the belief that that inner freedom and peace and joy and unconditional love are just all too good to be true. You know, that these things belong to somebody else. But the truth is that we do, all of us, possess the key to unlock our doors to an inner freedom, grace, and peace like we have never known before. And here's a good example of what I'm referring to. One of the major, shall I say, psychosocial, spiritual obstacles I run into when counseling others often occurs when emotionally or even psychologically wounded people are just generally frightened and immobilized by their potential for healing and inner growth. You see, failure is not the only thing that people fear out there. They might be afraid of speaking in public. They might be afraid of heights or whatever. But really, I'm finding that the one fear that people run away from the most, that dread the most, is this idea of finding inner peace and freedom. Okay. And in her book, Why People Don't Heal, by Carolyn Mace, she states that there, you know, are several reasons why people don't heal. And she comes right out and just says, look, we are not to remain wounded. We are supposed to move through our tragedies and challenges and to help each other move through the many painful episodes in our lives. And furthermore, she says that when we remain stuck in the power of our wounds, we block our own transformation. In fact, we tend to overlook the great gifts that are inherent in our wounds, such as we finding the strength to overcome them and learning the lessons that we are meant to receive. Because indeed, they are intended to teach us to be more compassionate and wiser. Well, again, many people I talk to and counsel are filled with brokenness, pain, and self-loathing. And, you know, and rightly so, many are at a loss as to what they can do next or struggling to find that insight that will empower them to take those first steps towards unlocking their own freedom. And still, there are many people who, out of ignorance or fear, would rather live, you know, in their grief and pain and sorrow, or shattered hopes or shattered dreams or another form of brokenness. I mean, for many, they're just not ready to let go of those wounds and embrace the possibility that they can live in forgiveness. They can live in gratitude, and they can live ultimately in love, you know, not just for themselves, but also love for others. Because one of life's greatest experiences of irony is how we often receive these deep emotional, psychological, physical, spiritual wounds as a result of being in relationships. I mean, whether or not the wounding was intentional or accidental, when we think about it, it is what we do afterwards. You know, once we've been wounded, or perhaps after we realize we have wounded another person, that will either reinforce these wounds or help us find a way to be healed and to be free from those burdens. And as we all explore our painful memories, and again, let's be honest, we all have painful memories. And as we explore all these painful memories, we often catch a glimpse of what healing and wholeness just might look for us. And when this insight occurs, you know, we may be tempted to resist that change or say run away from transformation or even sabotage ourselves by falling back into old ways, you know, in order to avoid embracing what thorough healing requires of us. That is, acknowledging a wrongdoing, asking for and receiving forgiveness, or letting go of bitterness, letting go of resentment, taking responsibility, living in gratitude, and so on, and so on, and so on. Even when an opportunity to forgive and to be reconciled with one who has caused us great pain and suffering, and vice versa, you know, whenever that opportunity is presented, because bitterness may have so entangled our soul, it's often impossible to let go of that pain. In fact, we might even believe that to let go of that bitterness, that's just simply a sign of weakness. You know, but all in all, you know, sometimes both the victim and or the survivor and offenders cannot envision taking hold of something better. You know, it's just too much of a vulnerable place for them to go. And although each person walks his or her own spiritual path in this life, embracing that forgiveness, healing, grace, and love occurs as each person is ready. And nobody can do this for another. You know, and again, going back to the great teachers that we've, you know, had down through history and the spiritual leaders that we find and the mentors, you know, the door of healing can be shown. They can show us the door. But it is our responsibility to turn the key and walk through. See, most of the time, there is a strong connection between this perception of fear of change and perceived powerlessness and a lifetime of struggling with self-loathing and low to no self-esteem. You know, through various hurtful experiences, you know, people have internalized, let's say, society's definition. You know, a definition that says, well, okay, because you've gone through things, well, you must have deserved it. Because, you know, after all, you are dirty and you're worthless and you have no voice and you are dispensable. You're no good. You're backward. You will amount to nothing, and so on and so on and so on. And although it is difficult to say when people start to internalize these messages, it's often easier, perhaps, to point out that, you know, maybe the question is from whom these messages came. I mean, maybe we've heard these things from, let's say, parents growing up or teachers who were not good or friends, or perhaps these messages were even reinforced by society over and over and over again. Well, history certainly has demonstrated that society often holds out an ever-changing measuring stick that has one standard for the so-called powerful people and the so-called privileged people, and another for the weakened and wounded people. But yet, nevertheless, regardless of its place in history, there seems to be a continuous pattern of interpersonal indignity and humiliation for people who do not realize their truth, or let's say have yet to realize their truth, because they've been convinced that the only way to know and accept themselves is to settle on society's definition and mistreatment of them. And unfortunately, for some wounded people, that's enough. Well, I'm going to take a break early in the show here, but I really want to hear what's in your heart about this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And as I said, I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Just want to give you a little heads up regarding next week's show. I'm not sure if you've ever read the book or read anything from this author, as I was talking about earlier in the show about, you know, great mentors and teachers and leaders and so forth. But when I read The Song of the Bird, it was by Anthony DeMello, and he's a Jesuit priest. And he was one who certainly always thought to empower others to discover the very best in themselves. And The Song of the Bird is just filled, just like any every other book that Anthony DeMello wrote, it's just filled with wisdom and insights and just very strong, encouraging words of wisdom, helping people to discover the very best of themselves lies within. And one of the things that I often admire about people who are able to do this is that once we begin to look at ourselves and we begin to discover the very best parts of ourselves, it's an ongoing journey. It's not just, oh, great, I found this and we're done. It always causes us, you know, once we discover something new about ourselves or a gift that has emerged or has come to fruition or has really matured, you know, it always compels us to keep on going. Let's keep looking. We should never feel as though we have arrived when it comes to our spiritual journey, because there's always things that we can be working on and working through. So I invite you to tune in next Friday. I believe that is October the 2nd. And, you know, I'm going to take a look at several of Anthony DeMello's writings through his book, The Song of the Bird. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about that when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many people are often overwhelmed, you know, not only by the concept that the answers they seek often lie within themselves, but also the belief that this inner freedom and the peace and the joy and the unconditional love are just all too good to be true. You know, as I said, some people just say, well, that's fine for others, but you don't know my life. You don't know what I've been through. And it also turns into to this false humility where it's like, well, there's other people out there who are more deserving. There's other people out there who, you know, are worse off than me, so let them, you know, fine. Or I just simply don't have the discipline to do that. Or I don't even know how to ask the right questions. Okay? Well, the truth is that we do possess the key, or I should say keys, to unlock our doors to an inner freedom, an inner grace and a peace like we have never known before. And as I said, whether it's within Western or Eastern cultures, when we come across effective teachers and very effective mentors and wonderful leaders throughout history, these have all been men and women who have been characterized as ones who help pull out of others the very best of themselves. And again, this takes time. This is a process. You know, and once we find that spiritual mentor and find that spiritual teacher and find that good leader that's pulling out of us the very best of ourselves, you know, we have to keep going. We just simply can't just, you know, be in like a passive relationship with them. You know, there's still a lot of work that we have to do in terms of forgiveness. But still, there are many people out there who just simply out of ignorance or fear would rather just stay in their grief or their pain or their sorrow. And I've counseled many of people who have become quite comfortable in these, shall we say, miserable states. Because even though they're miserable, they do take comfort in the fact that, well, they can benefit off of, let's say, secondary gains, where somebody, you know, would just feel sorry for them, you know, out of pity or sympathy or empathy, okay? Or perhaps they might have certain benefits to staying wounded. Now, I don't mean to slight anybody on this, because we do, by all means, have to support one another through the emotional, psychological, physical, and yes, spiritual wounds. Okay, but as we start taking a look at our healing, we also have to take a look at our responsibility of just what it is that we would then need to let go of. Not just the pain and the suffering of itself, but what else is, let's say, coming along for the ride that we've gotten used to that we might also have to give up, okay? So for many, they're just not ready to let go of those wounds and embrace the possibility that they can live in forgiveness, gratitude, and ultimately love for themselves and having love for another person. And this is where the term emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds come from. This is something that, again, I've just in my own spiritual journey, just coming to this realization of just looking at relationships in our lives and where we pick up these emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual wounds, there's something to be said for understanding that sometimes we walk around with self-inflicted wounds, you know, but let's, you know, just spend a little time here. You know, we think that if we say something harmful or if we do something harmful to somebody else, that it's never going to come back on us. Okay. But it does. You know, every negative thought, every negative thing we say, every negative thing we do, sooner or later comes back to us. And it's often reinforcing the wounded parts of ourselves, because that is where, how, and why we wound others. That's where it comes from, the wounded parts in ourselves. And we have many ways to understand this concept of, like, say, self-inflicted wounds, because we often say what goes around comes around, what you sow, you will reap. And even some people put it in terms of karma, you know, is another way to understand that no matter how you say it, humanity lives in an echo, you know, that what goes out from us will return to us. Just like we hear the sound of our voice echoing back in our ears when we are in a tunnel. And this is probably the best way I can explain it to kids. You know, kids are just really open to this understanding, this object lesson, if you will. because kids are just fascinated. You get them in a tunnel, you get them in a cave or something, or somewhere where there's an echo, you know, an empty hallway or an empty room or something. And once they hear their voice, you know, kind of reverberating back and forth, they start whistling, they start shouting, they start going, hey, or they're like, hello, or something. And they are fascinated of how it just echoes. And they just burst out laughing. They just think that's the greatest thing. But a deeper way to understand for us is, you know, when we look at, you know, just exactly where wounding comes from, you know, there's an old saying that, you know, hurt people hurt people. Wounded people wound people. Because this is where, you know, the pain and suffering, you know, and, you know, done to others is coming from. It comes from within another person, those wounded places that have yet to be healed. Okay. And, you know, everything we think and we say and we do is energy. And unless we transform that energy through healing our own wounds, it is going to come back to us exactly how it went out from us. And again, this is a phenomena that, you know, kids pick up on real quick. And, you know, and again, I run into it, you know, time and again, counseling the older kids, shall we say, the older clients who want to heal from their past and improve their relationships. You know, whatever a person is struggling with from one relationship or another, more than likely is struggling with the same issues in themselves. Okay, let's keep thinking about this in terms of energy. When, you know, whatever negative energy is being sent out, it's going to echo back sooner or later. Okay, and this is what I mean. A person who's filled with bitterness, let's say from a previous hurt or betrayal, will more than likely view everything and feel everything from a lens of bitterness if the pain has gotten that far. Or let's say a person who has experienced tremendous hurt from, say, just a broken trust in relationship. Unless this is healed and transformed, that person more than likely will view everything and everyone with suspicion. And this is very difficult for people to understand about the phenomena of emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds. What goes out has first come from within. You know, sometimes a person just might say, I'll never forgive that person for, which, if we peel back the layers on a statement like that, it usually means, I have a hard time forgiving myself for something. Or let's say somebody else says, I can never trust another person because, you know, again, usually means I have difficulty trusting myself. Or another person who says, I can't stand it when a person says this or does that, usually means there's some level of, you know, intolerance whenever they do something or say something that they can't stand. And let's just add one more here that, you know, maybe you've heard another person say, I just can't love that person because, you know, usually means I'm also struggling with loving myself. You know, how we are with others often holds up a mirror to us, you know. How we are with others is how we are with ourselves, and vice versa. How we see others is how we see ourselves. And these unresolved and unhealed wounds really distort how we view and interact in the world. Now, one of the things that I really enjoy working with people on is intergenerational trauma, because in severe cases, trauma can be passed down genetically. You know, in other words, it attaches itself to our DNA and often, I should say, covertly disguises itself as very harmful physical, psychological, emotional, and even spiritual symptoms. And as intergenerational trauma is passed down through, let's say, the generations, through society and families, you know, that is in what we carry in our genes and how we are raised or how we were raised, various social systems often are guilty of galvanizing harmful stereotypes and prejudices and injustices and emotional dependence and biases and so forth. And therefore, intergenerational trauma is not just limited to how it affects our families, but also how it affects all relationships, you know, from the most intimate to the mere acquaintances in our lives. And this realization is a significant aspect of and within healing our relationships. It occurs when we're able to understand what has so wounded another person and what has so wounded ourselves as to allow us to continuously act out of those wounds. But yet, we expect different results. And I have to say, you know, from my own personal experience, but that by understanding the background of those who hurt me, it's allowed me to take, the necessary steps, to move closer to forgiving and releasing the burdens of carrying around my wounds any longer. There we go. Let me say that again, as my throat was giving out on me, that whenever I understand the background of those who have hurt me, you know, it's allowed me to move closer to forgiving them and releasing the burdens of the wounds that I carry any longer. Okay? The same is true when we forgive another. You know, we're in a sense telling the person that we no longer want them to carry the weight of their wounds. You know, we also want them to be unburdened by any weight of bitterness or unforgiveness and shame and humiliation or whatever pain they have suffered from the past. You know, that continues to influence how they think and say and act in very, very harmful ways. But you know, let's take this a little bit deeper. What if, let's say we, working through, our forgiveness in our lives, okay? What happens if we go to another person and we ask for their forgiveness and the person or persons reject it? What if they spit it back in our face? You know, we're ready to forgive or we're ready to be forgiven, but the other person is not. Does this mean that we can't have true forgiveness? No, we can still release ourselves from carrying any psychological, emotional, and spiritual pain that we're holding on to, because we can now shift that negative energy that we have been giving to those things into more life-giving, healthier relationships. You know, it's tremendous, tremendous freedom we can experience when we realize we just look at our wounds and we start looking at forgiveness in terms of what is it that we keep carrying around? What have we gotten so used to that, you know, well, you know, I know it weighs 50 pounds, let's say, but I've been carrying it for so long, what's another 10 years? Okay. But how many of you out there have experienced true, wonderful, grace-filled forgiveness? Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that just it's powerful? It's life-changing. I mean, I've heard many people, and I've even used these words, that when I've been forgiven or I forgive somebody, it's like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders. You know, we feel lighter. We feel happier. We feel more at peace. Okay, so think about, you know, unforgiveness as what is it that we're still willing to lug around? You know, what are those wounds and how heavy do we want them to get? Because they just become heavier and heavier over time. Because now it's no longer unforgiveness, but now it's, let's say, bitterness. You know, it now they may have, let's shall we say, calcified into just some form of disgrace or shame. Okay. Forgiveness is powerful. Forgiveness is transformative. Forgiveness restores relationships. Our egos are those things that get in the way. The ego says, you know, you don't need to do this because, well, you weren't the one in the wrong. You know, our egos say, well, okay, look, it's not that heavy. You can keep carrying it because, after all, if you're carrying it around, you can get sympathy from others just how much you've had to bear up under your circumstances. Okay? But we can release ourselves from carrying any psychological, emotional, spiritual wounds that we're hanging on to. We can shift that energy even if somebody else is not willing. One of my favorite authors, Henry Nouwen, he has written several powerful, powerful books. And, you know, he's often quoted in one of his books as he states that almost 74% of people are compelled to go into some form of helping relationship or some form of helping professions because they themselves understand what it's like to be wounded. And, you know, again, I want to take this one step further here and just say that people not only see themselves as being wounded, but they also know the power of transformative healing that takes place in themselves and the effect it has on the rest of humanity. Okay. And they want the same for others. Okay, and then this is where, let's tie it back to, you know, those very effective teachers and leaders and mentors. They've gone through tremendous pain in their lives. They've gone through some horrific circumstances, but they themselves have worked through that, through grace, through forgiveness, through peace, through understanding. And they live now in just simply the power of gratitude and the power of love. And they want that for other people. They don't want to see other people walk around and carrying just enormous weight of pain and suffering in their lives. Now, again, we can go back as far as we want to with, you know, where do these wounds begin? But I had an interesting conversation with somebody earlier in the week about shame. And you've heard me talk about shame before on this program. You know, it's different from guilt. You know, guilt says, I've done something wrong. I feel bad because I did something wrong. I shouldn't have said that, and so forth. But shame is more toxic, as I would describe it, in terms of, you know, how we see ourselves, you know, because of those messages of what we've been told about ourselves. And yet, again, another form of life's irony is that we often grow up looking to others for approval and self-worth. You know, it just seems to be a natural part of developing a sense of who we are. In fact, this behavior is often how we first learn about ourselves and others and the world. And families or teachers or other early childhood authority figures kind of reflected their own views and mirror these perceptions back to us. In fact, you know, shame can begin fairly early on in our lives, long before we could form words. But we also come into the world very skilled at reading facial prompts or sensing another's approval or disapproval, or we can distinguish between a loving touch or a cold detachment, as well as learning every other emotion in between. Okay? And this is how we learn to express our feelings appropriately, you know, such as when and where such emotions are to be displayed. You know, whether we're at work or play, school, family celebrations, funerals, the ball game, wherever, Okay. And as we physically and emotionally mature, we have to learn to become less dependent on others for, you know, this, shall we say, directional affirmation, and replace it with an internalized or individual sense of who we are. In other words, instead of looking externally to get what we need in terms of approval and acceptance, we now look within to find such qualities. You know, qualities such as resiliency and peace and self-love. Okay, and nevertheless, let's also keep in mind that just as we initially look to others for our sense of affirmation and belonging and acceptance, so too are others looking to us to receive their sense of affirmation, belonging, and acceptance. You know, at first glance, this exchange appears to be mutually beneficial. But taken to the extreme, it can also lead to codependency in our relationships. And, you know, this is all the more reason why it's important to see the divine in everybody. Because when we're ready, God opens up for us a profound understanding of who we are as souls. And when we look at each other as souls, we soon discover that we see ourselves and we see others as souls. We begin to realize that the externals simply do not matter. Well, as I mentioned at the break, next week, I'm going to be focusing on Anthony DeMello and you know, his writings, mainly coming out of the book, The Song of the Bird. And you know, I just wanted to share one of those stories with you because it fits today's broadcast. Because, again, Anthony DeMello was truly one of those spiritual teachers and mentors who always sought to empower others and to bring them into higher states of self-awareness and self-discovery. And he often told this story, you know, to illustrate, you know, we can let go of former things in order to take hold of something better. He writes, here is a story about a villager in India who happens upon a sannyasi. Now, a sannyasi is a wandering mendicant who, having attained enlightenment, understands that the whole world is his home, the sky is his roof, and that God will look after him. And he moves from place to place the way you and I would move from one room in our home to another. I cannot believe this, the villager says to the sannyasi when their paths crossed. And, of course, the sannyasi says, what is it that you cannot believe? Well, the villager says, I had a dream about you last night. I dreamt that the Lord said to me, tomorrow morning, you will leave the village around 11 o'clock, and you will run into this wandering sannyasi. And here, I've met you. Well, what else did the Lord say to you? Asked the sannyasi. And the villager replied, he said to me, if the man gives you a precious stone he has, you will be the richest man in the whole world. Well, sir, would you give me the stone? And the sannyasi tells the villager to just wait a minute, and he starts to rummage around through his knapsack, and he retrieves this object. Would this be the stone you're talking about? The sannyasi asked, handing it to the villager. And the villager could not believe his eyes. It was the largest diamond in the world. I mean, he holds the diamond in his hands, and he asks, could I have this? Of course, the sannyasi said. Take it. I found it near the river, and you're welcome to it. Well, the villager took the diamond, and he went to sit under the tree on the outskirts of the village, you know, where he clutches the diamond to his heart and he experiences great joy. And it's kind of like the joy we experience when we get something that we really want. But do we ever stop to ask how long it lasts? Because think about it. You got the girl you wanted, right? You got the boy you wanted. You got the car. You got the degree. You were the top of your class, and you got the great career. Yet, how long does that joy last? How many seconds? How many minutes? Eventually, you get tired of them, don't you? Then you're off looking for something else. Understanding this is more valuable than studying the scriptures, because what good is it for you to study the scriptures if you've not understood this? If you've not understood what it means to live and to be free and to be spiritual. So this villager sat under a tree all day, clutching his diamond, and he became immersed in thought. And toward evening, he went down to the river where the sannyasi was meditating, and he gave him back the diamond. "Master," he said, "could you do me one more favor?" he asked. "What is it?" said the sannyasi. "Could you give me the inner riches that makes it possible for you to so easily give away this thing that would have made you the richest man in the world?" This is what it means to let go of something that, shall we say, no longer serves us in order to take hold of something far better. It's kind of the difference between those things that are temporal versus those things that are eternal. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I invite you to tune in next week when we'll take a look at more of Anthony DeMello's writings and pulling out the spiritual truths as he always sought to empower others. In the meantime, be at peace, behave yourselves, and until we meet again, may God hold all of us in the palm of God's hand. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.